Let me ask you a question, Julia. Is this your clicker?
Yeah.
Okay, right there. Okay, great. Good morning. My name is Cynthia Nunnally, and I'm here from Memphis, Tennessee. And one of the things that you will see is that there may be some discrepancy between, sometimes you'll see or hear me say Memphis and Shelby County Health Department, and then sometimes you'll see Shelby County Health Department, and some of that just has to do with transition. Memphis now has a dual government, so we have a city government and a county government. The health department falls under the county government, and within the last 3 months, we have now officially become the Shelby County Health Department. So sometimes it's a little bit, it hasn't been enough time to fully embrace our new title. So the title of my presentation is Achieving Health Equity is Everybody's Business. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, I am the Deputy Administrator for Assessment and Planning at my health department. And so that means that I'm a member of senior leadership, and I am responsible for leading and guiding a cluster of programs and services, one of which was the MAP process. I wanted to start with and transition from Julia's presentation just to tell you a little bit about where we ended with our MAP process. What you will see here is what the vision for our community ended up being. And it was real simple. It was a healthy Shelby County. And one of the things that Julia said is that you want your MAP process to be community driven. And this actually was sort of a compromise, because some of the people who participated in the MAP process, the public health community, the education community, some of the business community, wanted a more lofty, more health-focused vision. But the community didn't see it that way. They felt that the only way to have a healthy community is to have these three things in place. And that is a good place to raise children. Second is to have a healthy economy, and then to have good schools. That without those things, you can't have a healthy community. And so that's where we ended up with our vision. We did make a transition to, so what priorities are we going to identify as health priorities for our community? One of the things that happens, or is characteristics of Memphis and Shelby County, is that almost any health outcome that you can almost come up with, unfortunately, right now we're experiencing really poor outcomes. We're almost always at the bottom of the list, which is a challenge, and provides opportunity for lots of work and lots of creative strategic thinking. But these are the five that for the last 10 years pretty much always rise to the top as priorities for Memphis and Shelby County. You'll see heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. And one of the things that happened in our MAP process is that we had ahead of time said we want to work on five priorities. And so you'll see the first one, heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. That's a lot to have in one priority. But that was the only way that the group could compromise and to get to five priorities. And since some of the risk factors are the same, that's how we decide to put those together. Infant mortality, HIV and AIDS, violence, and teen pregnancy. And so these priorities were established, and committees, action teams were developed to work on strategic plans to address these issues in our community. One of the things that I wanted to explain also is that in Tennessee, at one point, each region in Tennessee was responsible for coordinating, hosting a regional health council. And there were state dollars that supported that regional health council. And one of the primary functions of that health council was to assess the community's health, to develop priorities, thus how we moved to MAP. It just really fit really well for Memphis and Shelby County. Other communities used other health assessment processes, but this was the one that we decided to use. Our regional health council began to have dialogue and discuss the whole issue of health equity. And then when unnatural causes came out, we thought, why not use this as a way to bring more people to the table to discuss the whole issue of health equity? Thus, how we came up with the title, It's Everybody's Business. Because what was happening is that in certain environments, in certain venues, some people were talking about health equity, but some weren't. And so in order to address an issue that spans across our whole community, you have to have the whole community, or at least a large percentage of it, be a part of the conversation. So we thought that unnatural causes would be one, it's visual. It might be more receptive to those communities that don't like research or sort of the terminology that we use, health equity, but that they could actually see real people who depicted what was happening around the whole issue of health equity. And so that's how we decided to use unnatural causes. At that time, the University of Memphis was starting to have plans to move forward with the School of Public Health. And one of the first pieces of that process was to develop a Master's of Public Health program. And they are much farther than that now. But we decided that would be a good partner. You know, why not forge a relationship, a stronger relationship with the University of Memphis through the Unnatural Causes documentary series and opening up dialogue with our community. So we pulled aboard, we invited the University of Memphis to come aboard with us, to meet, help us plan, help us just think, how can we engage the entire community in this process? So this was our plan. What we wanted to do was just simply talk, just have an opportunity for people to see the series and talk about what no particular end goal in mind, just to introduce this topic, in particular to people who may not have had focused attention on health equity. The next thing we wanted to do is we hope that the communities and the neighborhoods would take our MAP priorities, also looking at the unnatural causes and the whole issue of health equity, and identify for themselves priorities within their communities. Hopefully they would line up with the priorities that we set, but we said if they didn't, that was okay. Because that was one of the things we learned, is that it's not usually as effective if you tell a group, well, this is what you need to do. You're much more successful if you allow the group to tell you what they need your help to help them do. And so that's sort of how we came up with the neighborhood identification of priorities. The next thing we wanted to do was to have some community capacity building. We knew that the neighborhoods already had some conversation around things that they wanted to work on, but they may not have the contacts, they may not have all of the skills and tools that they needed to be able to address the issues in their community. And so as the health department and one of the academic institutions in Memphis, we were going to partner with communities and serve as coaches to help them through that process. Not do it for them, but to be there with them and guide them, or just offer whatever resources they might need. And of course, always leadership development. In most neighborhoods, there are the gatekeepers, or they're the people that you know to go to, but then there are also people who have an interest, but they've not been asked to be a part. So we saw that as one of the things that we could also give back to the communities that we were going to work with. We also wanted the communities to start looking at what assets they had. Often conversations were centered around what's wrong. You know, what are the poor outcomes in Memphis? Our public hospital, it's losing money, or the school system. It's just always focusing on what's wrong, as opposed to turning around and looking at what's here that's positive that can help us deal with some of our concerns. Then, of course, we also want to have a health and wellness prevention education component, and then this coaching and consultation, offering that we were going to provide to the community. And by that, we meant, you know, how do you set priorities? You know, sometimes in our work, we know what that means, and we have different processes that we use, but some people may not have that, and so we wanted to work with them through that, to do some action planning, help with the implementation, and to identify resources that they may or may not know. And, you know, being with the health department, being a part of the government, and then having relationships with other types of organizations within our community, we thought the health department and the University of Memphis could help communities with some of that work, as well as advocacy. So what we decided first was that who did we want to engage in dialogue? And we wanted to cast the net wide, look at some non-traditional groups that we may not have worked with, and just kind of start, just get started. I know one of the things that I had shared with the manager at that time is, you know, this seems very overwhelming. And so we thought, well, how do we even get started? And I said, well, let's just start. I mean, we may end up going down another path, but at least if we get started, we'll be a little bit further along. So what we looked at is trying to invite everyone to the table. And one of the things that Julia had on one of her slides was making sure that the staff was, that all of the staff was as knowledgeable as some of the staff. If you're doing this sort of work every day, then of course you're well-versed, you know the resources, you know the research, you know all of the best practices, you know all that. But if that's not something that you do every day or that you have time to stop and focus on, you may not be up on the most recent information. So we wanted to start with our workforce first and all levels, not just we tend to focus a lot of things on those employees who are doing community health programs, but we may not focus as much on our accounting department. Well, the accounting department needs to understand what everybody's doing so that they can then make better decisions in relation to our finances and making sure we have the money or allocating money appropriately. So if they don't understand the other part, they're half doing the job and they're not as informed. So next we wanted to look at community resources. We looked at entities within government and then entities that are not within government. We just wanted to, within our government structure, given that we have two governments, it's quite expansive and there are a lot of people. In fact, City of Memphis government is, I think, now the largest employer. And so why not start at home? And one, start with people that you can get to. And if you have buy-in from the mayor's office, then when you call a division and say, well, we're scheduling your film series, then of course they're going to be receptive. And sometimes you do have to use that. I mean, of course you want people to volunteer and want to be a part, but sometimes you have to use some other means. And then we also use community resources that were not governmental. Neighborhood associations, boards of directors. One of the things that we thought would be important is to try to attach the Unnatural Causes series to something that was already happening. Neighborhood associations have meetings, board of directors have meetings, they have gatherings, events, fundraising. So if you're already, if an organization's already having something, sometimes it's easier to get a yes if you're not asking them for a total another different time to meet. And so that was one strategy that proved successful for us, is that if we ask, okay, can we just come to one of your meetings? And you don't have to schedule another meeting. How much time can you devote to this? That seemed to at least get us in the doors. And then often what happened is once we got indoors and we had just scheduled maybe a short time period, the group was so engaged and hadn't had the opportunity to have this kind of conversation before, they wanted us to come back. And then we got to expand and make the discussion a little bit longer. The other thing we decided to do was, and one of the things that happened with the boards of directors of nonprofit organizations, with our regional health council, that regional health council was about 40 members. And each of those members were from all different parts of the community, business, academia, sports, everything. And most of them had a board of directors. And we thought, we need to get to people who are in decision-making positions. And what better group to do that than to the decision makers of their organizations? And so that was a really good entry point for us. We also decided with the health department, because of some of the grant funds that we receive or some of the initiatives that we're trying to do, we have all these coalitions. So why not start at home with those coalitions? And those coalitions are made of people who are not a part of the health department workforce, and that they can take what they learn out into the communities they go into. And then, of course, the general public. The way we brought the general public into the mix was through the libraries. We scheduled film series and discussions at all the public libraries. So that's a place that anybody could show up. You have no idea who's going to be there, and they can just come in and have an opportunity to participate in the conversation. These are some of the, what we did do is we wanted to make sure that we were as knowledgeable as we could be about the organizations that were going to be a part of this project. So we wanted to find out what they were about, what were their goals, what were their objectives, you know, what were some of the challenges that they faced, what were their resources, just so that everybody had just a general sense of who everybody else was. And that just further made the conversation, because it's conversation easier. It's often when you're, especially when you're discussing a sensitive issue, if the people in the room don't have some level of comfort with each other, it's even that much more difficult. So the next thing we did was we had an article in our Commercial Appeal, which is our local newspaper, talking about the film series and health equity and some of the work of the Regional Health Council to see who might be interested as a neighborhood and us coming to talk to them and to have this dialogue. So what we started with was we identified who was the key informant in that neighborhood. Sometimes it was the resident. It might be that there was a faith-based organization in that neighborhood and the leader of that organization sort of stood out as a leader. It might be that there was a precinct in a neighborhood, and we have these things called COAC, which is like a community action center. And so a lot of times those officers had been identified as the leaders for those communities. So we went to those individuals, scheduled meetings with them, one-on-one, to just talk about what's the history of your community. Because one of the things we knew that this series could really bring out some emotion. We wanted to be prepared for any outbursts, any anger, just you just never know what could happen, how people could react, because you don't know what's in their background and what experiences they've had and what this series might bring up for them. And so we asked about what kind of changes have your neighborhood gone through. We've had a lot of neighborhoods that have had some significant changes because of economics in the last 5 to 7 years. So we needed to know that. And then we also wanted to know what were some of the strengths of the neighborhood? How receptive might they be to this whole process? And of course, this was just one person's opinion. Sometimes there were two informants, but most of the time it was just one. And that was at least better than not having any information going into it. We wanted to find out if there was anything health-related already happening. There's a lot going on in Memphis, particularly around infant mortality and obesity, and because of the stats connected to our community. So there were some things already happening, but we wanted to know, well, what's happening? Is the community responsive to this? Are they going to be angry because the health department's coming to the community? Are there bad feelings about the University of Memphis? Just to, you know, assess what's happening in the environment so that we could have the best conversation that we could. Okay. So what we did, we used a tool that was described in the Unnatural Causes Toolkit, and this is the ORIT method. And it basically takes you through a process of how to engage the community or any group in conversation. It's first an objective piece, reflective, interpretive, and decisional. So we gathered all of the data that was connected to our health priorities and then some of the issues that were discussed in unnatural causes, and we presented that information and data and asked, well, what does this say to you? You know, some people have, like I know for me at the health department, every day there's a different set of data that you have to look at. You live and breathe that kind of information. But for some people, that never comes up in their day. So they never have an opportunity to see it and then also to give a reaction to it. Do they believe it? Do they think it's tainted? Just, you know, to see and give them a voice to say what they thought about what was being presented. And that's how that was our reflective piece, just to say, you know, I don't like that this makes my community look worse than this community, because we actually had a lot of data that actually compared communities to each other because of other work that had happened. And so this was an opportunity for some of those communities to say, well, I don't like it, I agree with it, or I don't. Next, we asked questions that were interpretive. And then, like, what are the implications of this data? And then what are we going to do about it? And, of course, this ORID method has multiple questions within each category. And I just picked out for you, for the sake of this conversation, just one of the main questions so that you could see what each category, the direction that it was heading. So what we wanted to do after that was we went to several communities and lots of different places to have dialogue. And because we wanted this to enhance the work that we had done with MAP and the priorities that we had set, we opened to communities and neighborhoods to say, are you willing or are you interested in working with us on some of the issues that you identify that you would like to work on? And we had four that stepped up, right? I mean, they were already eager. One of the things that we found that was consistent between these four communities was that they were already organized. They already had a history of working on issues. They already had a structure. And in hindsight, it probably would have been difficult if a neighborhood that had never met beyond their association meeting, had never worked on a priority, and had never had discussions about what they might want to do. This just helped the process go a little bit further. The first community was probably one of the most surprising priorities. What they wanted to do, what they felt was important to the health of their community, and it centered around HIV and AIDS, was that there was an abandoned hotel in their community that they wanted to be removed. But they didn't know how to do that. And so that was one of the things that the University of Memphis and the Health Department were able to do, to connect them to the offices, the officials, the political appointees, the elected officials who could help them in that process. And how do you start that? How do you get rid of a hotel that you don't want in your neighborhood that you think some risky behaviors are happening? The University of Memphis neighborhood, which was the neighborhood that we thought would have the most comprehensive plan, actually did not, by the end of this process, had not yet identified and narrowed down what they wanted to do. A Better Memphis, which is in North Memphis, which is one of the South and North Memphis are traditionally the communities that have lower income than East. And then this South Memphis community, one of the things that happens in Memphis, and maybe this happens in other places as well, is that you may have a jurisdiction that this part of the community does not have the resources that it needs. And right next door, there's a community that has more than what it needs. And that's what kind of happened in South Memphis. But a better Memphis wanted to focus on obesity as it relates to diabetes. And of course, you may know that Memphis is considered the fattest city, the most sedentary, with all these bad kind of acknowledgments. And so there was a lot of momentum around that whole issue of access to nutrition, nutritious foods, and then also physical activity. Then the last one, St. Andrew, what they wanted to do is to deal with the whole issue of food deserts and to start a farmer's market in their community that would help local farmers with their entrepreneurship, but also to bring fruits and vegetables to the community. And they actually, probably out of all four of these, the most success to this point has been the St. Andrew AME Church. Their farmer's market did open this summer, and it started with one day and has actually had to expand the hours that they even started with. And so the next thing I have on here is just what's next, what's ahead. One of the unfortunate things that happened was there was a change in leadership at the state of Tennessee in Department of Health, and there was a new commissioner. And before I told you that each region had resources to operate its regional health council, do a community assessment, and then set up a sort of strategic plan and committee structure to work on those priorities. Well, when that change in leadership happened, all of that funding went away, including the staff, including everything. So the department that operated and coordinated MAP is no longer there. So what's ahead for us now as a health department is to figure out how we can keep the work going with our current resources and to develop a system where now it's going to be that individual employees, a percentage of what they're doing contributes to this process and this work, as opposed to before there was dedicated staff. So, of course, and always looking for resources. So, if, you know, we happen upon some fortune, then this will probably be one of the first things that we do, because it is time for us to revisit the MAP process and to do our next iteration. We've done two, and so it's time to do another one. And this, I just have this, I like this proverb, I am because we are, because I feel like, and I've tried to lead this department, that some individuals in our community may think, well, that's their problem. Well, if some of us aren't doing well, then the rest of us can't be doing well. And so that's why I selected that proverb. Any questions? It's not going to the end. Okay. All right.
I have several questions. I'm trying to figure out from the time you began to where you are right now about how long the period that has been.
Okay. Yes, yes.
I didn't see anything that looked like it was connected to like better schools or anything like that. Were those just the health strategic issues, and there's some other strategic issues somewhere else?
Yeah, well, okay, so let me start. I'll start with that question. For the visioning phase, how do I explain this? The visioning phase, let me go back so you can see. Here, when we did all of our assessment, meeting with the community, meeting with all different types of representative groups to develop what do we think a healthy Shelby County would look like, the consensus at the end, which is a part of MAP, which is kind of be, which can kind of be a not a stressful, but it's one of those parts in the process where everybody's got to agree to some extent. And so when we got to this part, this is what the non-health, non-education, non-business Jane and Joe down the street felt like they couldn't get past. They understood that the MAP process was about the health of the community, and that was how it's designed, but for them, they could not see past this piece. There was input into what the priorities would be and that they would be health focused, and they were fine with that. but they would not budge away from this is what their definition of a healthy community would be. And it seems that at that time, that was in 2006, that these were the biggest issues in Memphis. I mean, we were having just so many problems with the school system that people couldn't see past. It didn't matter what room you were in, what the conversation was, it always went back to schools and then connected to children. Even if you were in a space talking about infant mortality, you could get a little bit of discussion out about, well, what do we need to do to address the high rates, but it was gonna always get back to schools. So we didn't see, I mean, it would have been more in alignment. You know, of course, us health department kind of people thought, well, this isn't congruent, but the community would not let it go. And it wasn't worth a fight. I mean, so if that's what the community sees as what they want on a piece of paper, what we work towards as what a healthy Shelby County would look like. And then they were able to move to what the health priorities were. And one of the things that happened was they wanted to look at, okay, so here are our priorities. How can we impact those by working with the schools? You know, how can there be jobs generated that impact these particular issues? So they made a connection, but it's just visually on a slide, it looks like they're not connected. And then once we got to the action plans, there was connection. The other thing you asked was about the time frame. This was done in 2006. Unnatural causes was done in 2008, 2009. And it still continues. We still get requests to come into communities or groups to do to view the series and to have the dialogue. We did, for some communities, we had to make clips because some were willing to view the whole series, and it is pretty long, and then some were not. So we shortened it for some. And then you had another question?
Some examples of what's being done about violence.
One of the work group for violence actually was led by the University of Memphis. We have a criminologist, I guess is what you call his name, but his title is Dr. Janikowski, who was already he was on the Regional Health Council, and he was already working with the corrections divisions in Memphis. And what this group decided to do was to have some social marketing around the whole idea of if you have a gun and you've had a prior conviction, that you would have automatic, the repercussions would be more stringent automatically. And so that was already happening with corrections. And so what the Regional Health Council did was help Dr. Janikowski get that message out to the schools and to work with schools, because we also were experiencing some elevated gang activity. And so that was something that was already an interest of his. He was already on the Regional Health Council, and it furthered that work. And there was a little bit of opposition to that, because some don't want to talk about guns at all, but we were experiencing some really, really, really dire situations related to guns in the schools, right outside the schools, and so that's the direction that they chose to go in. Hmm? Well, I can try to take a stab ahead. Well, I think that's kind of a difficult question to approach. Part of it being that, I mean, just like the title of the presentation that I put together, it's everybody's business. Health equity cannot be addressed just by the health department. I mean, that's just one piece of the local health system. I think perhaps some measures for accountability for what we do, but I think the difficulty is going to be in the overall measurement. So where do you go to then determine if there's some movement, if there's some improvement, to be able to justify your accreditation or your lack of meeting a standard. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think we should be held accountable, but I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure how.
The accreditation standards are currently being finalized, but it's going to be an iterative. They're going to constantly relook at this. Mm-hmm. So, and this is not NACHO official. This is kind of my opinion. I do think that accreditation standards are not optimal standards like you will see in some other types of performance standards work. And so I really do think that the work a lot of health departments are doing around health equity are considered really optimal levels of performance if you really look at the variation of performance across the country. And so something like health equity as a measure and something to document a health department doing at this current time through accreditation may be too much, given that just the way that the accreditation standards were designed are not really far-reaching optimal standards. That said, I encourage all of you who are interested in this topic to continuously share that input with the Public Health Accreditation Board. They're very open to these ideas of how to improve their system to really increase the quality and performance of health departments and the work that they do in their communities. And I think there are a lot of different standards that get at some of these health equity issues, like mobilizing, engaging the community. But the way that that will be documented and really measured, I mean, there's a lot of interpretation and range of activity. And so a lot of that will be fleshed out as the accreditation process rolls out and what they see in the field. And there's not going to be a yes, no. There are going to be different levels of accreditation. So as the whole initiative evolves and develops, I really think that there'll be a better understanding of how health equity may be able to fit within that more formalized process.
Well, first, the marketing piece, that went into the strategy of the groups that we decided to start with. For one, like I mentioned, the board of directors of nonprofit organizations, we had an entry into those groups because often someone on that board was a member of the Regional Health Council or we had a connection to that. So the only just cold marketing that the person may never have heard of it, never heard of us, or had any connection was through the libraries. And our library system has a what's called a link. And so we use that process to communicate what's happening on this particular day. And when we actually incorporated it into a system of workshops and seminars that they already had, and it was just another option. What we also did was we used the university. That was very helpful. Then we also used those two government, well, when we said about the two governments, we got input from elected officials that this was a good idea. And so in our community, if you get certain leaders, popular leaders or recognized leaders to say, that's a good idea, it trickles through our community. Word of mouth in Memphis is like nowhere else. It can be good and bad. It's good if it's something you want to have happen, but you know, had the first one not gone well, that same word of mouth would have made it not as successful. So through those government agencies, what we did was we went to the division directors and asked them to identify the units within their division that would be, one, receptive, available. We had to also look at scheduling. We tried to make each session be no more than 2.5 hours. Some went longer just because individuals were engaged in the conversation and they were okay with that. And then some, you know, 1 to 2.5 hours. The way a typical agenda looked was, first we introduced to the group the whole issue of what does health equity mean, sort of like how Julia did with some common definitions so that we were all using the same language. Then we presented some of the data, local data, so that when they viewed the series, they could make some connection to some of the things that were happening in the series and what was happening in our community. For most of the groups, the tie was when they heard that there was some inclusion about a discussion about infant mortality. During the time that we did this series, there had just been an article in our local newspaper comparing the infant mortality rates in Shelby County to third world countries. And it was just an explosive time to use anything that had the word infant mortality in it. But it helped us with this because people heard, we included some descriptions of some of the segments, and when they heard that, they were interested, they wanted to hear. Because most people thought, oh, we couldn't possibly be that bad. You know, there's somewhere else that's worse. So we had to make sure that we did present an accurate picture of what was happening in Shelby County so that when they did view the series, you know, because some of those communities were looked different than some of the communities that are experiencing some of these issues for us. So we didn't spend any money on marketing. Because we use the university, we use government, and we use connections that we already had. And one of the things that was fortunate for us, like I said, as a regional health council, is the individuals on that council were the top leaders in their organizations. So if the buy-in was already there because they were the group that came up with, let's share this series with other people, you have an automatic, some automatic audience because of that. So it's just like using the sphere of your influence. And so we kind of ask people to do that. You know, if you are in a civic organization and you have some influence in that group, we would love to come and share the series with them. Or we even had one Boy Scout group that was interested, but it was because the troop leader was a friend of someone on the council. So it just kind of, it was using what we already had, since we didn't have the resources to do any major marketing. Okay. The MAP process, it started, I wasn't there when it started, but it started in the beginning of 2005, and it ended where we were ready to move forward and launch our committee and action plans in January of 2006. It is, it's a great process, but it is, it's labor intensive a little bit. I mean, you have to plan and to be inclusive, whenever you're trying to be inclusive, it takes time. You know, it takes time to get a time, to have a meeting time where everybody can come. We had to make sure that we had, we were getting input at all different times of the day and not just traditionally doing it during the work day, because that cuts out individuals. If they can't leave, if this isn't related to their job, then they can't leave their job to come. So it took a year. We had done it 3 years prior, so we had a little bit of experience. Our health director was on the MAP work group, so that helped because we at least felt like we had a good understanding of the process. So that was in 2006, and then our committee started at that point. The committee work continued until the division ended, that section ended in November of 2008. Then in November of 2008, what we did, working with these communities, we pulled people from other departments. So HIV/AIDS, then individuals from the infectious disease section work with those individuals, that particular committee. Infant mortality, we have a host of programs and services connected to infant mortality, so we just pulled those individuals to help with that.
So 1 year prior,
1 year, yes. Yes. 1 year and a month. 1 year and a month.
I like the philosophy of health equity, but I don't see the, but your case study really focuses a lot on the resource constraints that you were operating under. And it's not clear to me how the local health department is in a position to use levers of accountability that can get the resources that you need to do the transformation of the system.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the organizations that have the power and money may choose not to take you seriously and participate. And I'm wondering how this MAP process can target the organizations that actually do have the money and resources, and utilizing levers of accountability that exist, whether it's civil rights laws or other things, tax powers, can sort of compel their participation in the process so that when you do see success in the goals, that you're actually gaining resources to expand the process so that it's a so that it's momentum that builds on itself, instead of sort of, well, you know, we reduce the violence in this elevator, but the school itself is really failing in many other ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, my first suggestion would be, if your community is considering doing a MAP process, the inclusion of those type of entities in the process at the beginning, because one, if they're not there, then they don't. Sometimes what happens is we have priorities, we want to work on the priorities, and then we go to those who have power or money or resources to help us with the process. But if they're a part of you getting to this end point, to me that adds some, you get to ask the question of who was involved in this process has something to contribute. And that they see, you know, what's happening in our community. I mean, like, I'm going to use for example. So in Memphis, one of our large employers is Federal Express. It's Memphis is Fred Smith lives in Memphis. So if we don't have Fred Smith or someone from his group involved in this process, when we go to ask for some resources to help supplement programs that deal with violence in our schools, it's going to be kind of out of context. So now I'm not saying that that's easy, because sometimes it's difficult to get to those kind of individuals, but the sooner you invite them into the process so that they're knowledgeable, so that then maybe they will contribute. One of the successful things that we did happen is with the Grizzlies. That was a new team that came to Memphis. Everybody was after them to donate funds, and they weren't in this process at the beginning because they weren't in Memphis yet. But once they came aboard and they realized how many concerns there are about obesity in our community, the schools are having problems with kids getting breakfast, they now have started this thing called Home Court Advantage, where they actually provide breakfast in the classroom to a certain number of schools, and now they're looking to expand that. But had they maybe not been in this setting to hear the data, to know how bad things are, or not how bad things are, that's not a good way to say it, but to know how the resources don't match the need, they might have chose something else to support.
I also think this concept of leverage and accountability, it's hard to move from current state mm-hmm. to one where you're actually able to use that and really mobilize resources and have the momentum continuing. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing across the country around health equity, even if it's not part of the MAP process, or if it is that it takes time to get this common language, to really understand what health equity is about. I mean, we'll see health departments with whole divisions dedicated to education, understanding themselves first, training their staff. I mean, it's taking years just to really shift the way people think. And so I think kind of on the ground, doing incremental, start having a conversation, getting these non-traditional partners to be recognized and want that they're instrumental in ensuring the public's health. I mean, that's a learning curve for a lot of them. Mm-hmm. It takes, you know, years. I mean, what do they say, like 20 years for kind of revolution? I mean, in a way, we are asking people mm-hmm. to really rethink their frame and how they think about public health. And I mean, it's extremely incremental. So mm-hmm. I would say getting to the point where you're saying where you have a lot of momentum takes a lot of time. And things like unnatural causes have been just a good start that conversation. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen building upon that? I mean, that's what we're trying to study and really encourage and provide support for. But I would say in the field, at least the field that's driven by health departments, it's still very much in its infancy in the mm-hmm. way that they're really trying to understand how to get people to really come together.
And like one example I had said about that during the time that we were doing MAP, that was when the article that compared the infant mortality rate in Shelby County to third world countries. Well, when that first happened, a lot of people didn't really use the terminology infant mortality. I mean, it just wasn't something that was in the forefront. But we had all these things happening at the same time. We had MAP. And infant mortality was identified more probably because of the health professionals that were in the process. Then we had the article. Then we had the series. Then we got a Healthy Start grant. Then we got, the state of Tennessee decided to make infant mortality an issue. Then our local mayor decided that infant mortality was going to be the banner of health that he was going to wave. And all of those things together, if you went to Memphis now, as opposed to 3 years ago, more people will at least know what it is and know that it's not just, women who didn't go for prenatal care, that it's broader than that. And it just takes time. And I always say, not one thing caused any of the issues that we're dealing with now, and there's going to be more than one thing that's going to solve it. And so this is just one way, one example to get to start the conversation at least.
I'm just beginning, so this may be a silly question. Are there funding opportunities for health departments to implement the MAP process? I wish the answer to that was yes, but nature has its own, it's affected by the funding as well. That said, there's a lot of awareness of the process, and so we have over 700 communities who use it in some way, whether or not it's really robust or not, but the awareness is out there. And federal and state funding opportunities are recognizing the value of the framework, and so we've seen stimulus dollars talk about MAP. We've mm-hmm. seen a lot of MAP communities be really good applicants because they can show why they're a good investment to funders. So what NATO does is connect communities with those funding opportunities. We really keep track of those. I have a postcard in the back for our MAP network, which is our social network. It's essentially made up of MAP communities, and people who are interested in the process have conversations like around funding, like health equity. So I encourage you to look at that. And we can have a conversation about what's going on in your state, and there may be some state-specific opportunities that may be available to you.
Thanks. And what about opportunities under the
of hospitals.
Yes. So is there something in place to try to link the framework?
NATO is starting a whole project around community benefit and how health departments can connect with nonprofit hospitals. We're partnering with the American Hospital Association, their Association for Community Health Improvement, to start providing support for those health departments whose community partners may not have a strong relationship with their nonprofit hospitals. What would that conversation look like? Where can there be a win-win on both sides? Really thinking about even the mechanics of the assessment process and how they can develop a system that benefits both of them. So if you are interested in learning more, I would definitely keep tabs on our website. We'll be providing information. And on the MAP network, there's a fact sheet that talks about MAP and community benefit and really why nonprofit hospitals should be part of this partnership and what they can get out of the process, not just completing this requirement, but what it means to be part of it.
Louisville. Other people call it Louisville, Kentucky. Sorry. And I have a cold word. It's both people call it Louisville, Kentucky, unless you're from there, and then we call it Louisville.
That's a great point. I mean, what's great about the MAP process, this idea of a framework, I mean, you can apply it to your situation, and you don't have to look for MAP-specific funding. Completely agree with your statement. I also would encourage you to look at the Foundation Center as a resource for foundation dollars. You can really find foundation specific to your state, your locality, and also search by what they're interested in, like things like community engagement. Really think outside the health lens, think about community engagement, think about kind of economic development even. You can really think outside of the typical public health funding streams. And not really, and this is something that they can do, help you reframe that to help you articulate why it's a good investment to funders. We are at time, so you want to be sensitive to that, but Cindy and I will both be here if you have questions or want more information about either health.